So my friend John Udell, who I've known for, I don't know, 25 years, maybe 20 years. He's a regular listener to Radio Open Source. And it's not a very well-known podcast, unfortunately, but the people who do listen to it are really, really smart people. And so I like to include myself amongst those people. I know, it's a little, whatever. Anyway, funny thing is, okay, so John talks today about how he'd like to be able to quote segments of a podcast the same way he quotes a bit of text in a blog post. I mean, you know, just review the process for quoting a bit of text. You select the text, you copy it, you go where you want to quote it, and you paste it. I mean, it's pretty easy. And, you know, the link, well, you hope there's some kind of permalink to the, I mean, hopefully to the actual paragraph that contains the quote. But, you know, you could find that. That happens. But you never can do that with a bit of audio. And so why is that? And my answer to that is we've yet to really come up with a good way to listen to podcasts. Any ideas that I might have had at the beginning, they never got implemented. I think the devices that we listen to podcasts on, well, they're not really designed for podcasts that well. There have been changes. I mean, you know, the Android and iPhones now both come with podcast listening apps. And so that's good because just listening to them in the music apps, which, you know, was iTunes or whatever they call the music app on the iPhone, I guess they call it music, with its playlists, it really doesn't lend, it's not set up for podcasts. I mean, it's set up for things that you pay money for and that you listen to over and over again. That's music. But a podcast is something you pay nothing for and you listen to it once and then it's garbage. It's radically different. I mean, in a way, a podcast is more like an ad. I mean, if you look to see how the really good ones have evolved, that's really what you're looking at. Like, for example, the Daily Podcast. It's one of the best podcasts out there. It's certainly leading a category of them. Once they, you know, I mean, they are, but they're the original. And it started out just with an idea that they could do a podcast for the 2016 election. And it even had a different name back then. And the format is very simple format. They interview the reporters from the New York Times. That's it. I mean, occasionally they'll do a special where it's something else, but it's very rare. I mean, and basically, so it's one of the checklist items that a reporter does after writing usually what is a big story or in the sense that they spent a lot of time writing it. It involved a lot of research. That's one kind of story that they do it with. And the other is the story itself is really big. So like, I don't know, if a president gets assassinated, okay, or there's a terrorist attack like 9/11, I mean, I'm taking extreme examples. Well, you know, that will be the podcast for the next day, or horrible fires in California, or a hurricane hits New Orleans, or, you know, you get the idea. So in that dimension, podcasting has grown. Well, anyway, so yeah, things like the Daily Podcast or the Brian Lehrer Show is another good example. It's a call-in show that has a guest. That's their format. And it's on WNYC in New York. And it's really one of the best. Certainly the best I've ever listened to of that genre. Lehrer is a fantastic interviewer. He's got a great attitude about people. He encourages The people who call, it's like there are a handful of people that are like that, that do the call-in shows and really have a very sort of positive attitude about the people who call. Diane Rehm would be another great example. She just, I don't go into detail, but Lehrer's like that. I would consider calling in. I actually have at times tried to call into a show and have not gotten in time or whatever. It's not important. I get a lot out of listening to a show. So, but it's an advertisement. The daily podcast is an ad. That's how I got started on that. In that it's selling you basically on the New York Times. It's a way for them to create more value relatively inexpensively from the work their reporters are already doing. The reporters like it. That's very clear. And they sell subscriptions. That's, you know, they have this, the ad, do they have sponsors? I'm not sure if they do. If whatever they are, the ads, if there are ads on them, they're very unintrusive. I think that mostly they're just selling the New York Times. This is the message I've gotten, is if you want to support the Daily Podcast, subscribe to the New York Times, because the Daily Podcast is the New York Times. There you go. Pretty simple, right? Makes perfect sense. And I've always felt that, you know, that you don't have to hit people over the head with your advertising. You're building up a name, a reputation. You're doing the logical thing that an organization that's in favor of news would do in a situation like this, where you've got a medium that is clearly incredibly useful and it's relatively inexpensive for you to produce your news content in that format too. And while you can't charge for it, it does help bring new subscribers in. I'm sure it does. And it certainly helps in the case of the New York Times, which is the leading news organization of that type in the United States. That it helps put up a really good barrier to entry. The fact that, I mean, that helps cement their position as the dominant, not just leading, but dominant news organization of that kind, you know, where the others are, you know, the Washington Post, the LA Times, the Boston Globe, you know, take all the big cities and take their newspapers, Chicago Tribune. I don't even know if Chicago Tribune's any good anymore. I know that San Francisco doesn't really have a good newspaper anymore, but, and then of course they compete on an international level as well, because the New York Times is the leading American, in other words, it's an advertisement of their dominance, really, I guess would be the way. They would never put it that way, but I can put it that way. But just all the technology around listening to podcasts pretty much sucks. It's you'd think for a medium that is getting on in years, like podcasting is, that it would be better than it is. But it is a little bit better than it was, let's put it that way. But then again, on the other hand, the tools for listening to audio anywhere and for listening and for watching video anywhere pretty much suck too. They do. I mean, think about it this way. Let's say, here's my setup for my TV. I've got a TV that has Roku built in. So Roku is a given. I'm always running Roku. And what that means is that for my use of television, which includes now Netflix and Hulu and YouTube TV, that's how I get my over-the-air type TV and the, you know, standard cable issues, you know, CNN, MSNBC, Fox, etc. I don't watch Fox, but it's part of the package. And you get some ESPN and, you know, it's how you get your sports. You know, it's all standard. I replaced Verizon because they weren't doing shit. And the one thing that YouTube had that Verizon did not, no, not Verizon, sorry, Spectrum. That's who I used to have. I'm sure it's true of Verizon as well. that YouTube did something very innovative, at least in my world it was innovative, is they have the cloud-based DVR. And I mean, it's a fancy way of saying that they record all the shows and you can access their recordings of the shows. I think that's how they, who knows how it all works legally or whatever. But, you know, they were the right company to do that. They've got, you know, that kind of stuff down. And so it's great. It's useful. It's better than what I had before. And they at least fit in with the controller. But I'm talking about the remote that Roku has. The Roku remote is a standard. It is a strong standard. It may be the thing that cements people to Roku more than anything. It's like, you know, the mouse keyboard interface for the Mac or the interface for the iPhone. Well, so if you put an Apple TV device on your TV, which I do, well, guess what? You have to pick up another remote. It doesn't use the Roku remote. I guess you can put the Apple TV app on your Roku, which I do. But it was, and you know, it's just typical Apple. They have a remote and they like it. And there are things to recommend it. It's way different, radically different from Roku. But I would use it a lot more if they just fucking supported the Roku model. And so as a result, even the most basic functionality, I find impossible to use because my brain is never sure which remote I'm using. It's not just that, because I also watch video. I can get YouTube TV, for example, and HBO and Hulu and all, Netflix, all the rest of them, Amazon. I can get them on my iPhone, I can get them on my Android phone, and I can get them on my iPad. Won't be too long before I can get them in my car. I mean, I already am using, by the way, it's really cool. A car has Android version of CarPlay, which is a whole new different software. Works completely differently from the way Apple CarPlay works. It's okay. It's worth learning a new way to do this because that all sucks so bad. And I'm willing to try another. It sucks so bad, but it on the one hand. On the other hand, it's infinitely better than the shit that Subaru gives you. And I do mean shit. It really is. I mean, you have to be a software company to do this software. For some reason, the car manufacturers, wherever they get their software from, it sucks. And I don't know what to say other than the first chance I got to not use their software, I took it. The car I had before I had the Subaru, it didn't have the option. It was a 2007. That's how little I used to drive. I mean, I even got rid of it after a while because I lived in Manhattan. No need for a car. But yes, the last car I had before that was a 2007. And there not only was there no CarPlay, but there was no iPhone when that car came out. So by definition, there couldn't be a CarPlay. So, but this whole thing is like just completely bogus. I mean, I don't know. Bogus might not be the right word. It's just verklempt. It's completely what's the word? FUBAR. Yes, it's FUBAR. Fucked up beyond all recognition. That's what FUBAR means. I'm sure. Not sure if that's official or not, but that's what I think it means. All these things are fucked up because there is no dominant standard. Same thing happened with podcasting. I mean, believe me, I tried to talk to, I talked to anybody who would listen, anybody who was on the content side, and anybody that was in a position to make a device. I tried to talk to them. I thought they might listen because I had some ideas about podcasting that worked, but it's just the way it works. Is people figure, well, if you created something open and it became popular, well, thanks very much, but now we don't have to listen to you. But it's kind of childish, isn't it? I mean, you know, you don't have to listen to me, but I don't know. I'm not charging you a lot of money. Maybe that's the problem. I don't know. You could listen to me. That's the thing. I mean, who else aren't you listening to? That would be another way of putting it. Isn't quite so arrogant. I mean, if you're very picky about who you listen to, this is something that I have seen myself do many, many, many times, is that I have an opinion about whether or not somebody has any idea at all about whatever. And if I don't think they have an idea, then I really won't listen to their ideas. And I've seen myself do it, and I've seen the outcome, the loop close, where I've missed things. And you go back and say, well, why did I miss this? Did I not hear about it? Yes, that guy was trying to tell me about this. You know, I think the one that really caught my attention was desktop publishing. I was very active in the software industry at the time. And it was all happening where I was, you know, in the Macintosh and, Siebold, the Siebold crowd that formed around desktop publishing. And I was really tight with the Siebold people. The guy who ran Siebold, Craig Klein, was a good friend of mine. But my first impression of desktop publishing was, well, nobody wants to do that. Nope. Bzz, you lose. I couldn't have been more wrong. Everybody wanted to do it. It was like, oh, that's what it is. Why didn't I know that? It's because I had formed my own opinion about it. And I was absolutely sure. I mean, I would literally say nobody wants to do that, honestly. Even though if I look in hindsight, it's very obvious that people wanted to do it. I had, hooked up with a software company early in my career, in 1979. And they had the equivalent of, they had a desktop publishing setup in 1979. It wasn't called desktop publishing, but it was a laser printer and it had software, and you used the software to, you used desktop publishing type software. Only the thing was, is that you had to have like $500,000 to have one of these things. And they did have it because they got venture capital money and they were going into publishing. They were going to produce a shitload of manuals. And they said, we need to get really good at this and we need to have the right equipment. And they had the money, so they did it, you know. A few years later, I started my own company, and really when laser printers all of a sudden were $2,500 and you could lay a book out with a word processor, it wouldn't be that great, but then there you go. That's when you got your desktop publishing. Somebody said, well, we could just take what they were charging $500,000 for over there, and we could do it for $695 over here. And there came Aldus PageMaker and Quark Express and Photoshop. That's the world that Photoshop came out of. And anyway, I completely blew that off, and I completely was wrong. And after that, when somebody tries to give me an idea, I try really hard to listen. I still don't always listen. So because there's, it's just, you're inundated with this shit. Most of it's garbage. Most of it's just spam. So anyway, we're a long ways from having the audio thing. We're still at the beginning line here. For something that everybody does, which is watch TV, and increasingly everybody listens to podcasts, we have no ability to innovate here because, we don't. I mean, because it's, oh, that's a whole nother subject. We just don't have the ability. Certain people might have the ability, but who knows? I mean, it's why has blogging been so stagnant for so long now? Blogging software. I mean, we used to innovate new ideas every few months. And I don't know, the last time, what have been the last new things, ideas in blogging? I think Medium was a new idea. I think Ghost was a new idea. And there certainly are, I don't know. Well, Twitter, Facebook. But you see, it's hard to call that blogging because they define themselves by removing important features from blogging. I mean, hugely important features, like linking. It's not the web. I mean, those. So that's not blogging. Those, you can't think of those as blogging innovations. They could be blogging innovations. I desperately want them to be blogging innovations. I mean, but, you know, I kind of tried. I came up with 1999.io, and it's like a hybrid of Facebook and a good blogging system. It's where, what would happen if you decided to take the limits off of Facebook in terms of linking and style and enclosures, titles. I mean, those are your basic features. And you use the same interaction that they have in Facebook. Well, I couldn't get anybody to listen. It's still sitting there. So I would have to conclude from that is that you can't innovate there. Maybe Matt Mullenweg could innovate there. Maybe. I don't see any indication that they're going to, in any way, come out with a new vision for what blogging is because they haven't. I mean, you know, Medium, which I cited as an innovation, definitely an innovation in blogging. It came out in 2012. That was 8 years ago. There are people... never mind. It's sad because I don't know what's holding it back, but it shouldn't be. But there you have it. Okay, well, I've rambled too long. Thanks for listening. Bye.